Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Before we get into the ideas we're going to share today, I want to briefly mention our national conference. We have PJ Fleck as one of our keynote speakers. We have state champions there, guys who have won over 300 games. We have four of those guys now, including the winningest coach right now, active coach, and second in football history, JT Curtis, with over 500 wins and 26 state championships. Go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast to register and see more. Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We are hopping back into our conversations with state champions, and one of the first states done every year, the first state done every year is Alaska. And today we have another coach from Alaska joining us. It's Coach David Devon from Ben Eielson High School. Coach is 128-48 in his career, all that at Eielson. He's coached basically every position. They have been state champs five times, including 2018, as well as runner-up in 2003 and 2005. Coach runs a wing T offense and a 4-2-5 defense. So, Coach, it's great to have you here. Certainly, you guys are experiencing some success up there in Alaska.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coach, let's get into your background here a little bit and talk about really first, what is it that really made you want to be a football coach?
Well, when I was in college, I'd come back and help my head coach who coached me when I was here, was really interested in like the zone schemes and stuff we were running in college. And so I'd come and help him with those things and just kind of said, hey, you have a knack for it. And Before that, I never really thought about it, but you get closer to that career termination light in football, you start thinking, like, this is something I've done for a long time, and I love the game, you know, and you look at coaching, and it's definitely a way to stay connected. Mm-hmm. And those coaches that I had, outside of my father, the biggest male role models that I had in my life, and it's a great gift to be given by anybody, and I figured that, hey, it's a way for me to stay connected. It's a way for me to give back that gift they gave to me of connection with strong male role models. And it's been a great choice ever since I made it.
Coach, I know that's a topic we talk about all the time on the podcast and how important that is. Not being familiar with Alaska, I've never visited there. How important is that to be that strong male role model in Alaska?
Well, you know, I think we're a lot like everywhere else where, you know, there's, you know, about 50% of our kids are either in a, you know, a mixed family where they've got a stepmom or stepdad, and or they've got a single parent home. So huge. And for those guys to maybe have those role models that aren't the best at home sometimes, to be able to see coaching staff be able to step into that role as a positive role model, I think it's huge. I mean, I really think it matters where you're at. Young men need to see how to do things right sometimes.
And you mentioned them being able to see that in your coaching staff. How much of an emphasis is that for you as, you know, over the years you've put together your coaching staff, you've looked for certain types of guys, as well as, I guess, instilled a culture where you are able to bring some of those positive things out in being a positive role model?
I've always kind of approached it as you look at the man first before you look at the X's and O's when you're looking at hiring assistants, you know, and how they are carrying themselves in the community and how they interact with youth, because sometimes that's tough for some people. They want to be the best friend, and that's sometimes not that that can't develop over time and after they graduate, but you know, being able to be that strong figure that lets them know what's right, what's wrong, and then you talk with the guys about X's and O's, and I some of the better assistants that I've had here may not have been that strong in the X's and O's to start with, but they were great people and worked great with youth, and can always help coach up a coach. So you want to get those positive guys in, help them out to become a better coach. So it's everybody helps everybody kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I've noticed that, especially with the young coaches early on, some of those guys have that trouble in trying to, I guess, distance themselves from being that friend and understanding exactly how that dynamic works, especially if they're guys who have played in your program and maybe they didn't play on the same teams, but they're familiar in the community, et cetera. How do you address that aspect of it and help your coaches develop in terms of understanding the balance between essentially what you said, being a role model, and then that guy who maybe is more of a friend?
Especially, you know, today, you know, social media, the whole deal, right? One of our big tenets is you're not a Facebook follower or a Facebook friend until after they graduate, and kind of keep that separation there. We talk a lot about it because we are an Air Force base, so we have a lot of young guys that want to come in and help when they can, and that's one of the first things that we talk about is you're pretty close in age to some of these guys, and we've got to keep that line very clear. Doesn't mean that you have to not build relationships. It just means that you have to, you're the authority figure, and you have to remind yourself of that sometimes.
And on the other side of it, Coach, the technical tactical, I know here in the mainland, you're going to be able to go to Glazer clinics everywhere. You're going to be able to go to college clinics everywhere and have that kind of interaction. How do you guys develop professionally in terms of the X's and O's on the technical tactical side?
We've been pretty fortunate. Our about every 2 to 3 years, our booster club will pay for our Glazer registration and our hotel rooms, and then coaches will pay for our tickets out of here. Which is, for some of these guys, it's their coaching paycheck that they're paying to fly down to the Glazer clinics. We've hit them in Portland and Seattle, a couple in Vegas, and then on the years that they don't, the guys that can, we go out, try and make it every year, either to Seattle or Portland Glazer, and then just try and bring stuff back for those who couldn't. And it's just, we've got a pretty good network of coaches here in the state. We're pretty tight-knit group, so we bounce X's and O's off each other all the time. So it's just be a lifelong learner and find those places and find those ticket deals, and we can get out to those places.
Coach, you mentioned your father being a great influence on you in your life. When you look at the coaching side of it, who's really made an impact on your coaching philosophy and who you've become as a coach?
The coach I played for in high school, Buck Nystrom, was probably, I always hear his voice in the back of my head when I'm, we can do this, and this, and can read the second level and you keep it simple. And he always said KISS when everything started getting a little too complex. Keep it simple, stupid, and the stupid is always meant for you. So, but I also think that every coach that I've met, I've been able to take something positive from and be able to implement in some small way or tweak it to the way it fits us. And all great teachers and coaches are, I think, probably the best thieves out there and adapting what they borrow from other coaches. And it's a constant learning thing for me. Every coach I meet is always added to my toolbox or giving me great ideas to start in a place. And I think that's hopefully it'll continue.
Coach, you mentioned the idea of KISS, keeping it simple. And, you know, I agree. You get all those ideas. You know, think about it on a Saturday. You sit down, you watch the opponent. And once you get into this game, I think we all love scheming things up. How often do you reflect back on that and have to preach that to coaches, especially your younger coaches? Because I know those guys love to share ideas and contribute, and they're always looking for a way to jump in there. How much do you find yourself emphasizing that, and how much have you preached that to your staff?
You love the young energy in a coaching staff, but sometimes it's okay. I get what you're saying, but how can we boil that down to the nuts and bolts? How can we shouldn't have to take 12 seconds to get what we want to do out of our mouth in the huddle. We shouldn't have to spend a week and a half going over a concept when installing it. We should be able to install in a fairly timely amount. So how can we boil that down to nuts and bolts, get rid of the tongue twister verbiage that everybody seems to like so much, and keep it simple with what we do? I mean, I myself have fell into that where you want to number everything and everything has this, and you've got all these cool little things, and we've boiled it down now to where we've just got formation and one-word plays, and everybody understands what's going on. So it's quick. We're in a two-minute situation. You know, we know what everything means, and the line can communicate, and the backs communicate, and we feel we've simplified it pretty well. And even the young guys that come in full of that verbiage and things like that, it's they look at it, and they're like, yeah, I think this is a little bit easier.
Well, I know when we're younger, we certainly make some mistakes. You know, looking back at yourself as a young coach, what mistake did you make, and what did you learn from it?
I became the head coach here when I was like 25, so I was still pretty wet behind the ears for just about anything you could think of, let alone coaching. And, you know, just being able to separate that emotion of the game, right? This is an emotional game, and being able to separate that and be able to just stay level-headed and, you know, not worry about that call, not worry about that missed block, not worry about that not wrapping up on that tackle, and just being able to get into that next play mentality and be level. And luckily, I figured that out fairly quickly. And in doing so, I realized how it affected the team, too. Because if you got a, you know, crazy head coach who's yelling about everything, then they kind of are a little spun out too. So being able to figure that out sooner probably would have been one of the better things for me.
When you look at your coaching staff, do you have a mix of guys? I know you want to be level-headed, and I do think that's a good place for a head coach to be. Do you have a mix of guys who maybe are a little bit more emotional than others? Is that the dynamic you have?
Oh yeah, you always got to have that. You got to have that fiery guy. Typically, that's for the young guys, right? they like to be that guy. And been real blessed. Our my defensive coordinator was actually coaching here when I played here, so we've got a real strong relationship, and we kind of tend to be the level-headed ones, and we let the other guys be the rah-rah, you know, kind of get on a kid pretty hard, and then we'll be the ones that, whether it's offense or defense, walk up to them and then give them that positive, hey, you can do it kind of thing. So I've been very, very fortunate to get kind of the mix of guys I've got with me right now, and we've been together for quite a few years, so it's working really well for us.
Coach, shifting gears and looking at kind of the big picture of your program here, what kind of things are you doing to build your culture as a team?
You know, I can't remember who I stole it from, but you know, every year in January we have the team vote on 3 to 4 guys that they perceive as leaders, and then we have those 3 to 4 guys go through this draft, and then, you know, they'll be in charge of, depending on the size of our team, 10 to 12 guys, depending on, and they're the ones that start, they're the ones that collect the grade checks. They're the ones that take attendance in the weight room, make sure everybody's there. They start to build that ownership, and it also helps them hold each other accountable, which I think for kids today is a little bit tougher. Think, well, you can't be buddies if you hold each other accountable. Well, we think you can, and we think it's what builds a strong bond between teammates. So, and then they collect points, and they, you know, we come up with, you know, I think last year with the popularity of the turnover chain, I think we came up with a WWE belt that the winning platoon got to carry around. And just, you know, I think that's one of the biggest things that we've implemented that has really driven our culture over the past probably 10 years, is just being able to hold each other accountable and know that when somebody calls you out, they're really a better friend than just somebody who will let you slide. So, but that is, it's definitely kept our program heading in a positive direction.
Coach, that's not an easy thing to do, to teach kids to be the guys driving accountability, especially within their peer groups. How do you teach that aspect of it? How do you get them comfortable with it to the point that they are willing maybe to step up, be vocal, whether that's in front of the team, whether that's individually, but at some point something has to come out of their mouth, and they have to be able to be willing to step out and tell somebody, hey, this is how you do it right in our program.
Yeah, well, and once those guys are voted in, so to speak, we kind of spend a week with them and a weekend day with them and just talking about what does it mean to be a leader, what types of leaders are there. There's the lead by example, the vocal leader, you know, all of those types of things. And that piece of it may not, just like anything, you know, whether it's a relationship, you know, sometimes there's difficult things that you have to talk about. But if you don't talk about them, what happened? You know, the relationship can turn sour, or the thing that you really needed to get done doesn't get done because you were afraid to speak up, or, you know, those real world translations and how just being quiet is bad. So, and we spend a lot of time with them, and we actually, defense coordinator Don Fry, we sit down with them and we talk to them and we say, hey, do you think we always agree? It's like, you know, I make mistakes as a head coach. Coach makes mistakes as a D coordinator, and we help each other out by saying, hey, step back, let's look at it, let's rethink. We don't have to yell at each other, but we can talk and we can work it out. And that's just holding each other accountable. And I think once they see that that dynamic works with us, and we've been together for 15 years. So it's once they really start to see effectiveness, and luckily we've had kids in the program that have seen it work. I guess one of the best ways I could explain it, this year we had two seniors come to us this year, transferred in through the Air Force, and they had come from losing programs, and right away the kids were picking up on, hey, that's not how we do things. We do things this way. And being able to change their version of what football was like to what our version of football was like in a matter of 3 weeks was pretty amazing. So they get it, and I think it's pretty awesome to see when the kids are taking ownership in something so much that it means something to them so much that they're willing to get out of their comfort zone and talk to kids that they see aren't doing the things that they need to be in. And what's really cool is some, you know, you would expect those guys that were voted as leaders to do it all the time, but sometimes some of those younger guys are calling out some of the other younger guys for, hey, we don't show up late to study hall. We don't, you know, just little things like that. And it's pretty cool.
When you give that leadership to that first group of guys, your 3 to 4 guys that the team envisions as their leaders, how are you able to then help them translate that message to the rest of the team? What kind of support are you giving them along the way? And I guess how long for you does it usually take to, for lack of better words, catch fire with the rest of the team that you start to see the bigger group buy-in from everybody?
We've had this in place now going on 10 years, I think. And I think once those guys get voted in now, you can see that they're ready. They're like, oh, it's my turn. They get excited. It's my turn to step up, to do those things. So I think in the first couple of years we were doing it, it took a little bit, just because it was a little bit different, that idea of being uncomfortable. But once it gets rolling, the momentum it's created has been pretty phenomenal. And we haven't had real issue with it for quite a while. I think, go back and think, that first year after we did it, there was definitely some growing pains, but then you just kind of tweak things to help the kids out, or what kind of tools do they need? But once it does catch fire, I mean, I think we started this in 2007, 2008. And that first year was a little rough because we had some guys that were voted in that hadn't bought in fully, just meeting with them all the time, making sure that they were on top of it. But by 2011, it had just caught fire, and the guys really just ran with it. Now they just chomp at the bit when they're elected, they're ready to go.
Yeah. Have you had the situations where there is that individual who, for whatever reason, isn't buying into the team concept, isn't getting aligned?
Yeah. And I think we've had that twice. Early on, we had it. And then in 13, we had one guy in particular, and I had two or three of his platoon guys come up and say, hey, coach, he's not doing what he needs to do, and da da. And I was like, okay, paper, rock, scissors, because you guys came to me. One of you is going to be the new platoon leader. So, and that kid, one, was pretty surprised because he was a sophomore. and he ended up being one of our better leaders as a result. And I think a lot of the guys in that platoon really gravitated towards him because he really started picking things up. And yeah, so there have been a couple times, but we always fortunately have been able to right the ship. And the guy that stepped down was absolutely cool with it. He's like, it wasn't me. I'd much rather be part of the group and help succeed, but not as much have to push and pull if needed. So,
Coach, this is paying off for you when you look at the record, when you look at state championships, four of the last 5 years, there's some consistency there. What do you attribute to having that consistency in your program, that consistency of success?
Biggest thing has been I think consistency in our assistant coaches. Like I said, we've been together for quite a while. So the consistent message that the kids are getting, the consistent development, sometimes up here that as I look at other programs, that's probably one of their biggest downfalls is, you know, they've had three head coaches in the last 5 years and they always seem to be struggling and trying to find their way. And I think just having that good solid group that we've put together, and it's been nice. And on top of that, we've got great kids. They make it easy because they're definitely a bunch of yes coach kind of kids. So those two things put together make for a pretty easy job for coaches.
Coach, stepping onto the field, I know you're probably involved in both sides of the ball, but offense is your primary area. When you look at philosophy on offense, what are some of the key tenets that make that up?
A lot of the wing T cliches really hold true for us. Not about attacking walled cities and banging my wall, banging my head against the wall, trying to make my favorite play work. If it's not there, it's not there. And then the other piece is you've got to do enough to keep the defense in conflict. I think that's true for every offense that you run, but the wing T, it's great because for every play, there's at least a counter off the play. There's a play action off of the play. So you have those things in your back pocket and you're able to keep the defense in conflict. And, you know, they may be able to take one piece of it away, but they can't take it all away. And it's kind of my job as calling plays is to, okay, they've taken that away, but what have they given us? So it's just finding those, you know, whether it be in game prep, on tape or even during a game, if they're come out in something completely different, is they can't take it all away. So find out what they're giving you.
When you look at your background with the wing T and your study of that system, what have been some of those influences in the X's and O's area? Who have you studied or learned from, whether that's directly or through materials or videos or books that they put out?
When I first started this, it was actually, how do I stop the dang thing? Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I went and looked at it. But then as I started reading about it, you know, obviously, you know, you started the Tubby Raymonds and those guys and the traditional wing T stuff. And then you look at like Gus Malzahn and some of the stuff that he's even currently doing now at Auburn. But those guys definitely have been heavy influence with just the base stuff. And then I've got a coaching buddy down, Soldatna, Galen Brantley, that runs a version of the wing T. He runs the power T. Mm-hmm. And a lot of talking with him and things like that. And just looking at how it would fit us. We typically have, again, we're on an Air Force base, so we don't have bruising linemen. Like my center this year was 5'5", 140 pounds. So how can we put them in a position to be successful? And the wing T did that for us. So going to clinics and listening to like the newer guys like Rick Stewart and those kinds of people and how they've kind of developed it to work for them, we were able to put together a pretty solid package that has been pretty successful for us.
It's funny, Coach, because I watched some of your film, and when you think of people identify as 23 personnel, which I see you in a lot, you do think of those big bruising teams today, but it's actually an offense that is built for that undersized lineman. Talk to us a little bit about, I guess, what appears to be a power offense versus something that you do need the finesse? And where are you creating advantages for yourself?
It's one of those things. I think a lot of people, they always getting off the bus eye test, right? We never seem to win that one, but but our guys are, we really coach doing the little things right, the kind of the technical aspect of being an offensive lineman and making sure that you're getting to those aiming points. And it doesn't matter if the guy across, and we really don't ask very often for our guys to take somebody head up. Mm-hmm. We're taking advantage of angles, a down block, we're cross blocking, we're folding, we're gut blocking, and doing all of those things to give our faster, a little bit more agile guys a good chance of being successful. And then teaching those aiming points, when you're getting to those points and we're staying flat back, we're hitting at the hip area, and when you hit that area, big guys tend to move a little bit. So we don't preach that vertical movement. We want a little bit of horizontal movement to create those creases and let our backs do their job. So, but we've been successful. I mean, this year we rushed for, in our 9-game season, we rushed for over 3,600 yards. So they've been pretty successful with it.
I know when I see those teams that do get in compressed formations like you, thinking in terms of modern football, we've become so used to spreading, 53 and a third and attacking the field horizontally and vertically and going back to some of these compressed formations. You realize when you see it happen that there's actually a lot of advantages in the passing game as well, because now you have field space to run to. There's actually a lot more space for that guy who is running from a tight formation into an area to attack.
Yeah, it's especially with our play action game, which even compresses the defense a little bit more at the play fake, getting our guys the out route or the deep out becomes very, very powerful. Or the drag across the field into that space that's been vacated, definitely been very well for us. We don't pass a whole lot, but when we do, we're pretty efficient at it just because that space is there. And then it's just playing pitch and catch.
Obviously, you mentioned Coach Malzahn, and he's taken Wing T roots and really brought that to, I guess, what you would call a modernized offense, right? Because people think of what you're doing as traditional Wing T, and it goes back a number of years, but we see Gus utilizing that in the spread, utilizing RPOs, doing all those kinds of things. When you look at, everything that's out there and what you're studying, what kind of things have you excited for the future, where you might go with your offense?
Yeah, the RPO thing does kind of intrigue me a little bit. I've seen some stuff here probably in the last 5-6 months, being able to RPO off of, our belly and down play, and be able to RPO off of our jet stuff. So, we actually kind of have a couple of clinics earmarked that have those kind of topics in February. So we're going down to do that. And I think, again, being in that compressed formation, really an RPO in a compressed formation really seems to, for me at least, really open up the edges. And lets us be able to do some pretty cool things, keeping the defense in conflict.
What are some of those RPOs from the compressed formation that you've seen?
The belly play, right, which for us is probably, if we looked at it, we run it a ridiculous amount of times. And we do have some play action stuff on it that's very, very successful. And we run that to our split inside. So now being able to take that split in and get him involved, and if people fall asleep on him, be able to hit that belly, ride that belly, and if that outside backer blows in to stop the belly, it'll open up that slant for that split end pretty nice. So those things are looking pretty promising. Being able to put it out on the field and give the kids enough reps to stand what they're seeing. So those things look pretty exciting to me.
Do you see yourself going to the pistol or gun, traditional gun, back beside for that?
We've kind of talked about it. We've already started having our meetings for next year and talking about what we got coming back. And I think with what we have coming back, the RPO is a little bit more effective out of that pistol. It also makes, the option piece of the Wing T a little bit more deadly now. So I think those things are things we might see from us next year.
Coach, I know in watching some of your highlights, trap is a big play for you guys. It's a simple play. It hits pretty quick. I have not seen it as much in recent years. I know people struggle from the gun to run it as effectively because from the gun, I don't think it hits quite as quick. And so it's not as effective, especially when you're trying to hit that quick trap inside and get the linebacker moving just enough so that you have a seam there down the middle. I have seen teams actually take that back who's next to the quarterback and just direct snap it to him, and the quarterback fakes the ball going over his head. But I haven't seen much with anybody handing it off. Talk us through your trap play. I think it's becoming a lost art, but you know, maybe it makes its way back into the game a little bit more. Talk us through your trap.
I love trap play, and with us, we mix up our backfield actions with trap. So, you know, we got our rocket play, which hits outside right now, that gets linebackers moving. As soon as they see that type of motion, they're moving out of there. We run it off our jet sweep play, so our jet motion gets those backers moving for us, gets safeties rolling down, and then we'll run it off our buck sweep action as well. So all three things really are big plays for us in and of themselves, but then to put trap in front of it, to where, and it's hitting right now. Everybody sees those motions. They're rolling to them. They're running to them. It gives our guys great angles. So we can mix any of those back actions up. So if we have those guys that typically like to watch our eye candy in the background, we, you know, trap becomes very, very powerful for us. So just you walk them through, you know, our play side tight end is going to step on a 45-degree angle. He's going to rip with his outside arm. He's going to escape up to the second defender. He's going to become part of that funnel wall that we really like to create. Tackle is going to look to take the cleanest route he can to go set the wall on that play side. And he's got a couple of different rules depending on where that defender is. You know, for us, you know, his cleanest inside is probably the best, but we may have to release him outside depending on alignments. Play side guard, he is going to be inside gap, down to backer, depending on what their defensive alignment is. Again, he's got to be very, very aware, though. If they're like in a double eagle, we've got to our center will give a domino call. Our center will fill for the pulling guard. Play side guard will take the nose guard, and then we'll trap the other eagle lineman with our backside guard. Center, we try and keep everything pretty simple for our center. His rule is always mama, man on, man away. Always going to pull for the pulling guard unless we've got – or seal for the pulling guard unless we've got a man head up. And then he's got a couple of calls he can make based on what we've scouted for him that week. So, and then our – obviously our backside guard, he's going to pull into the line of scrimmage because we want it to hit quick. We want him to be ready. And we always preach to him, pull right, hit right, make sure you're hitting with that right shoulder, keeping your body, making sure you're swinging that rear end to the hole, keeping that seam. And then our backside tackle is going to seal and cut off. Sometimes we may have a call where he has to call it Superman block, get out in front, almost in a bear crawl in front of that if the center can't get down. So he's going to try and help on that seal. If they've got a stunt on, nobody crosses his face, he's going to stay on his path. The split end is always going to fake like he's running his post route, coming to the backside, and then he's going to go and he's going to hunt that middle third defender, typically that free safety, and then hopefully the fullback will be reading off of where he's coming from. We preach to our fullback. Fullback's got to stay inside the funnel unless he's forced out. Nice little wall gets built if everybody's doing their job, and we get a nice little kick out. And then typically we see either a strong safety or free safety is the last guy that our fullback has to worry about if everything's going according to plan. And then our other two backs and quarterbacks are going to carry out their fakes based on what action they're running, whether it's buck action, jet action, rocket action, and, you know, holding their defenders on the edge to be able to make everything work. And again, I think it's pretty underutilized. Past few years, we've become pretty good at it. And it's just one of those that you know, for us, trap is still in the, you know, if it's third and five or less, trap is still in our call, on our call sheet, just because it's been so successful for us.
Coach, I do agree that part of the success of that play really is on that, you know, what you called eye candy, that I guess being just in a one-back set, whether that would be under center or in the gun, and running a trap downhill, maybe doesn't get that same effect as if you get that Mike linebacker really thinking about the perimeter and having to scrape outside, whether whatever other eye candy you're adding to it. Do you feel that that's part of the success of the play?
Oh, it definitely is. And you know, and then when, you know, we get to guys that have learned not to look at the eye candy, got a couple of little tweaks we will do to the play. You know, we'll influence trap where we'll pull them both guards right now should scream to those linebackers that it's outside play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll just do little tweaks like that. We'll even influence block with our tackler tight end, depending if we're running it strength side or weak side, to give it a look like we're going to run rocket or we're going to run. Just those little tweaks have helped with those linebackers that are really solid in reading their keys. And, you know, every once in a while we'll give them a false key to worry about. So then they start questioning, well, coach told me, but, you know, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm. When you look at how you practice this play, obviously you could dress it up behind quite a bit. Does it even matter for the guys up front? What are they hearing? You said you're going to keep your terminology simple and try to be, you know, one word play. What are they hearing in a play call that keeps it simple for them?
We'll call the backfield action and call the play. So for us, if we're going to run it, it'd be jet trap right, buck trap right, or rocket trap right. I mean, just that simple. And then those guys, when they get up there, depending on the front, are going to have their calls to tell the backside guard where the trap's happening. And obviously the back's listening to those calls, so he knows where his cut's going to happen. Pretty boiled down and simple.
If you're looking at, let's say, a situation where you started to get into a little bit more of a spread offense, or you were teaching up a coach who wants to run this in the spread, what kind of things would you make sure were a part of that? What components do you feel he needs to have for that play to be successful? As I pointed out before, there are some challenges to it, you know, in the spread teams or gun or whatever it might be. What do you think you would do to help translate this play to that kind of an offense?
I think in the spread, the trap would work great off of the jet sweep out of the spread, coming in front of the quarterback, you know, having that running back that's either on the side or behind the quarterback, however you want him lined up, you know, taking that false step or that jab step as that jet's happening in front of it and then hitting right off of the jet back downhill. Seen a lot of people do it with, they just run the trap play with the quarterback right off of the jet. Most of those spread offenses will have that single back lead for the jet. So if he takes his jab step as that mesh is happening and he comes back underneath it, it works pretty well. The other thing is be, you know, find a way to create, whether it's a, you can almost slow trap it, I think, too, if you just create that outside zone feel with the back and then have him plant and get vertical back to the trap side. I think that might work pretty well. I think your blocking up front is going to be pretty consistent, but just creating that action to get second level movement to help your linemen and keeping on their track and getting to those guys.
Coach, kind of wrapping things up here, a few more ideas for those young guys looking to make it in this profession to be able to have some success like you have. What's your advice to them?
Try not to be the smartest guy in the meeting. Each assistant coach that you bring in should bring something in to make you as a head coach better, because they bring they're smarter than you in something, right? You know, as a head coach, you never want to be the smartest one in the room. You want to surround yourself with guys that can challenge you and bring things to the table instead of just always saying, okay, coach, yep, you're the guy, you know what's best. Those guys have to feel a part of it too. And if you're always, if they're not contributing, they don't feel that ownership. So, and you want those guys to have that ownership in the program so they feel just as strongly about it as you do. Make sure that your guys' visions are lining up, and your assistants are what keep you young, and your assistants are what make you look good. So look at those guys and find pieces of them that help make you better, you know, and hopefully you're contributing to help make them better so they can eventually go on and be a head coach somewhere if they want to. So just surround yourself with guys that are always helping you be the best you can be, I guess, would be the best thing I could say.
Coach, I know you devote a lot of time to this. It's important to you. Feel mission-driven in what you're trying to do to help create successful young men. What do you do, though, to make sure that you're giving enough to yourself and your family, that you're just not tied up in that one aspect of your life?
Oh, yeah, that's the tough one. Fortunately, I've got a wife that was a head basketball coach for a while, so she understands to some extent. But just you got to make time for those things. You've got to have a date night with the wife even during season. You know, you've got to be able to make it to your daughter's soccer game, and you've got to be able to make it to kids' football games that aren't happening at the same time your stuff is happening, you know. And then just communicating with everybody and family, you know, talking. Fortunately, I've got a son who's playing, you know, my oldest is playing for me right now, and he probably thinks we talk way too much. And you know, my daughter, who's in seventh grade now, is a big, big soccer player. And I make sure I ask her about her practice and what they did and, you know, how she's feeling and how school was. And then my youngest is playing Pop Warner ball, and I ask him and how his day was and what's going on, and just staying connected with everybody in the family. And then, you know, the other biggest thing is find some time for you too. You know, my time, I'm lucky enough to be up here in Alaska. So in the summertime, my decompression time is get on a four wheeler and I go to where very few people can get to me. And I pull out the fly rod and I go fishing for a while and just relax and take that me time, recharge the batteries. And in the wintertime, I go drive on a frozen lake and put up the little ice hut and just fish. So, you know, those things kind of ground me and recharge me. And you just got to find those things that do that for you, because it can't be football 24/7, 365. You've got to have some time to take the wife out to dinner. You got to take the kids to a movie. You've got to take care of those relationships just as much or even more as the relationships you're trying to develop on the field with your players.
Coach, you've experienced tremendous success in your program, 5 state championships, 2 runners-up, 128 and 48 over the course of your career, all at the same high school. As you look at all the things you do and what you've put together in your program, what's one thing you would really point to as giving your team the winning edge?
Consistency in coaching, consistency in message, staying on those, reaching back on those values that you have as a coach and saying, hey, this is where we're going to stand, and we're going to do it right. We're going to worry about the small things, the technical things. And, you know, the big things tend to take care of themselves. So, yeah, it's the consistency, and the guys that I've had, been fortunate enough to have here coach with me, you know, consistency in that message and just being here ready to work every day.
Coach, how can our listeners connect with you?
Twitter, Coach Devon, and then my email address is david.devon@k12northstar.org.
And we'll put Coach's contact in our show notes, as well as his coaching points for the trap play that he explained today, and some video as well. Coach, it was great to have you here on the podcast and learn a little bit about what you're doing up there in Alaska. Best of luck to you and your team in 2019, and we'll be watching you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.